Okay, everyone, Parshas Korach, great to see you all back again. What I'd like to do is really share two comments, one from Rashi and one from the Ramban. Really, some or multiple comments from Rashi and from the Ramban, but they're on one topic each, which I think come together beautifully. What I'd like to share with you from Rashi is an insight that occurred to me this year, which is the first time that it occurred to me. And sometimes you have a thought, like, it's such a simple thought. I don't know why I never thought of this before, but to me it was like a new thought. So I want to share that with you. Hope you will enjoy it. We'll go through all the background to get to that thought on Rashi, and then we'll see how the Ramban, even though he's not really quoting or working on Rashi, takes that thought and does something completely different with it, but how they will tie in together. Okay, let's go. So, Parshas Korach, what is Parshas Korach all about? We have the rebellion of Korach against the authority of Moshe and of Aharon. The sages describe that the rebellion really had a number of different components to that, which we will see inside in a moment. There was the element that Korach didn't appreciate that Moshe was, in fact, the Melech, the king, so to speak, of the Jewish people. He appointed his brother Aharon as the Kohen Gadol. It looked a little bit like nepotism. We have the aspect that he gathers 250 other leaders together because there was a complaint that the Kohanim had taken a lot of authority and that the Bechorim, the firstborns, had been pushed aside for the entire tribe of Levi who took their place to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Korach has there are a number of different factors that go into this rebellion in different aspects. And let's take a look at some of the things that Rashi will quote to us from the sages that drove Korach into this. So let's take a look. Let's learn a few psukim and then we'll take a look at some of the Rashi's. The parasha begins, Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kos ben Levi. Korach, who was the son of Yitzhar, this is going to become very relevant in a moment, his actual lineage, Yitzhar ben Kohath, so Kohath ben Levi. So here you have here the lineage, we're going to go through this in detail in a moment, but let's just get it started. Levi, of course, the fourth name on this list. Levi is one of the 12 tribes, one of the sons of Yaakov. Levi has three sons, Kohath and Gershon and Merari. And Kohath is one of those children of Levi. And then from Kohath had four sons, and Yitzhar is the second of the four sons of Kohath. So Yitzhar is a grandson of Levi, and he's the second son of his father, Kohath. And then Korach is the eldest son of Yitzhar. So Korach, here we have the lineage, is a great grandson of Levi himself. Levi, one of the 12 tribes, has a grandson named Korach. And Korach takes Dothan and Aviram, two other major instigators in this rebellion, Va'on ben Peles b'nei Ruvain, together with On ben Peles b'nei Ruvain. There's, every time you learn this parasha, there's so many different comments to be made here. We'll just briefly, On ben Peles never appears again in the story. And Rashi comments, even though he's listed here in the very beginning as one of the instigators of this rebellion, together with Korach and Dothan and Aviram, On disappears from the story. So the sages say, what happened to him? So the sages say his wife talked him out of it. His wife said to him, what are you doing? You're getting involved in this with a rebellion against Moshe and Aaron. After all the way, why? It's not going to work out well for you. And she actually convinces him to stay away. The sages very colorfully say that when the Chevra came to get him, they came to his tent to say, come, join us. She took off her hair covering, so that as everybody came, they thought that she wasn't dressed appropriately, and so they shied away, and that way she was able to shoo them away, so to speak, from the tent and leave her husband out of it, because she knew if they got to him, they would convince him to join them. So she convinced him to stay inside, and she kept everybody out, and she is the heroine of, one of the heroines of the story, keeping her husband Own out of it. In any case, the Ramban also parenthetically notes, there's no historical context given to this. We just finished reading last week of the story of the spies, and then the Parsha just says, Vayikach Korach. When did this rebellion actually happen? We mentioned last week that the Jews had actually encamped at Har Sinai for almost an entire year, that they were there at the foot of the mountain in Midbar Sinai. They learned a lot of Torah from Moshe. They built the Mishkan. And then the time came, as we learned last week, for them, or 2 weeks ago really, to start traveling. And as they began traveling on their way to Eretz Yisrael, which would have been a short journey, they decide to send the spies. And that, of course, results in the debacle. When did this rebellion take place? So the Torah does not give us a historical context. It doesn't say when. Very often we have dates in the Torah. And it was in the second year in the desert, in the fourth month, on the second day of the month. We don't have anything like that. It doesn't say when it was. So some commentators learned that it actually happened earlier during their stay while they were encamped around Har Sinai. The Ramban rejects that and says, unless we have another reason to, always learn the Torah in chronological order. And this rebellion took place at this particular point in time, right after the sin of the spies. The problem with learning that, as the Ramban notes, is all of the complaints that Korach has, we're going to learn about a number of them in a moment, but all of his complaints, whether they be about Moshe, whether they be about Aharon, whether they be at the firstborns, whatever his complaints were, they happened months earlier. Moshe's been the lead of the Jewish people since Mitzrayim. Aharon was appointed the Kohen Gadol a year ago. The Levim were appointed many months before. So if it happened, that's why some commentators learned that this happened earlier and we're just told about it here. But the Ramban says, learn it chronologically. But then what's the big deal that he's raising all of these issues now? These are old issues. Nothing new happened. The Ramban says, no, that's why the Torah is highlighting it happens right here. Something very significant just happened, and that is the story of the spies. Because when the story of the spies finishes, we get a net result of a decree of 40 years of wandering in the desert, that the entire generation will die in the desert, and only their children will enter in. The Ramban says, Korach was the classic opportunist. He understood that the people, of course, were going to be in favor of Moshe and Aaron. He had led them all of this time. But now is the time to pounce, because now everybody's depressed. Now everybody has just been told that they're going to die in the desert. They're never going to see this promised land. They're never going to make it in. Only their children will, but not them. And when there's no hope, into that atmosphere, Korach jumps and says, now, Moshe is the one who says this. Moshe, I got problems with Moshe. Aaron, I got problems with Aaron. And so it was into that sense, that attitude that was pervaded throughout the entire camp. Now Korach jumps with old claims that he's been sitting on for a long time. Let's keep reading. Vayakumu lefnei Moshe v'anashim b'nei Yisrael chamishim u'masayim. So he took Korach and Dathan and Aviram, and 250, he gathered 250 other leaders, Nisi'ei Eidah, they were all leaders of their communities, Kriyei Moed, Anshei Shem, they were all men of great name. Vayikohalu al Moshe ve'al Aaron, and they gathered together against Moshe and Aaron, and they say to them, Rav Lachem, Moshe and Aaron, you've taken too much. Ki kol ha'eidah kulam kidoshim. All of the community are holy. Uvitoicham Hashem. Hashem dwells amongst all of this, all of us. Umadua tisnasu al kehal Hashem. Why are you lording yourself over the Jewish people? Literally, you've raised yourself up that you should become king, and that you've taken your brother Aaron as a Kohen Gadol. What right do you have to do this? We are all holy people. Now, the actual argument that he makes requires study, and I'm just acknowledging that I'm just reading the simple reading of the psukim and not going into the depths of what his actual claim is. That's for another shir, another time. Let's take a look at Rashi's comment. You'll have it here on the side of your page. In a second, let me get it for you here. As to what is driving Korach? What is causing him to do this? What misled him to be able to do so? So Rashi here says as follows. If you see this on the right-hand side of your page, this one. What induced Korach? You see where my pointer is, a couple lines down here in the Rashi. What induced Korach to quarrel with Moshe? Rashi asks, "Ma ro'a Korach lachloik im Moshe?" What did he see to want to do this? Says Rashi, he was envious of the princely dignity held by Elzaphan, the son of Uziel, who Moshe had appointed prince over the sons of Kohath. Now, Kohath, again, was the son of Levi. Levi had a son, Kohath, and then the subgroup, the family of Kohath, had a nasi, had a leader. who was appointed the leader. So Elitzafan ben Uziel, as the Torah had listed earlier, was appointed. Now, going back to the genealogy, I really should have given you a whole chart. It would be really easy to follow if I had a chart in front of you. You'll have to imagine this as it was. Kehas, again, Levi is the grandfather. He has a son, Kehas. From Kehas, he had four sons. The eldest of the four sons was Amram, the son of the father of Moshe and Aharon. And Moshe and Aharon, the eldest of that son, took all of this leadership. Moshe was, like, so to speak, the king, and Aharon was, so to speak, the Kohen Gadol. So they had the leadership. The Nasi, then the prince, should have then been taken from the second son. Since the eldest son, already Amram had the right of his eldest children, Moshe and Aharon, took this their leadership positions. The next of the four sons, which was Yitzhar, should have then been given the next role, which would have been the leadership. And Korach was the eldest son of that second son, Yitzhar. So he thought he should have been given that particular right. But instead, it was passed over, and Amram is the eldest son of Kehas, then Yitzhar the second, and then Chevron, and then Uziel, the fourth son. His son was given, Elitzafan ben Uziel was given the position of the Nasi, was given the position of the leader. So Korach felt, as Rashi here quotes, as to Amram, Amram was the eldest of the four sons of Kehas. His two sons have themselves assumed a high dignity, one as king and the other as a high priest. So then who is entitled to receive the second, the next ranking, the position of the Nasi? Isn't it me, who is the eldest son of Yitzhar, who was the next son to Amram? But he went all the way down and appointed the cousin, the son of the Uziel, the fourth of the children. And so Korach felt that he was slighted, that in his mind, the way that it should have gone was in order of the parents. Again, he's on the cousin level, and so his cousins Moshe and Aaron were children of the eldest uncle, so he's the next from the next uncle. Should have been him, and instead it went to a younger cousin of his from the a younger uncle from his father's generation. And he felt that was not right, and so he was angry that he'd been passed over this position of honor, and therefore he begins this rebellion. That is one of the comments that the sages make here, as Rashi quotes, as to what led Korach into this rebellion. Again, there are other aspects as well, but that's one of the insights that he felt slighted. Rashi makes a second comment that I'd like to share with you about what led Korach into this particular rebellion. That we find a few psukim later in a comment that Rashi makes over here. Says Rashi, Korach pikeach hayo. Rashi's in Pasuk Zayin. I have it from the English, a couple lines down here on the side of your page if you want to read it for yourselves inside. Says Rashi, Korach was a pikeach. He was a very wise person. Maro'o lishtus ze. What did he see to get involved in this foolishness of rebelling against Moshe and Aharon, which Hashem himself will take as a rebellion against himself, and of course it's going to end very poorly. What did he see? What misled him? Now again, Rashi already made a comment that he felt slighted, that he wasn't appointed the leader. But now Rashi makes a second comment here based on the words of the sages. Eino hita also, his eye misled him, says Rashi, quoting from Chazal. Ro'o shal sheles gedula yotzei mimena. He saw a line of great men, like a great chain that would descend from him. He was going to have great descendants. And amongst his great descendants were Shmuel Hanavi. The prophet Shmuel himself was going to descend from Korach, and we could trace the lineage from Korach, which the Torah gives us, his lineage and his children, all the way down to Samuel. The prophet himself comes from Korach. Shmuel Sheshakul Kenegan Moshe and Aaron, the words of the sages, Shmuel was of such greatness, he was equivalent to Moshe and Aaron themselves. This was not just another prophet. We have many prophets, all of whom were tremendously, obviously, I say that facetiously, great prophets. Shmuel, from amongst the prophets, wasn't just another prophet. Shmuel and Navi was like a Moshe and an Aaron. Omar bishvilo ani nimlat. And he saw, I'll be protected. I'll escape punishment because of Shmuel. And he further saw 24 mishmaros. Omdos livnei banov kula misnavim beruach hakodesh. 24 shifts of the levim were all going to be prophesied, filled with ruach hakodesh, the divine spirit. And he said, "Is it possible? Is it possible? Kol eila, efshar kol agedula hazos asid la'amod mimeni. All of this greatness is going to descend from me. Va'ani edom, and I should be silent." I shouldn't have the kavod, I shouldn't have the position. Look what's going to come from me. And on this account, says Rashi, L'chein nishtatef lavo lo'iso chazaka sheshamim p'moshe kulam avudim ve'echa nimlad. Moshe said, when he comes up with a plan, which we haven't read the whole thing, Moshe says to the group that approaches him, he says, okay, we're going to do a little test. Moshe says, everyone's going to take a fire pan, you're going to fill it with ketores, with incense, and we're going to burn it, and the one that the fire descends and accepts, that's going to be the chosen one. It's going to be a divine sign. It's going to be a heavenly choice, and everyone else is going to be lost. And Korach thought, I won't be the one who's lost because look at the greatness that's destined to descend from me. He had a vision. Clearly, he was a person of great stature that he had such a vision that was in, and he was right about what was going to descend from him. And so he was misled. He was misled by the vision in seeing the greatness that that came from him. So those are two of the comments that Rashi makes as to what misled Korach. Number one, it was he was slighted that he felt based on his father's family position as the number two son. After the number one son already has a Moshe and an Aaron, the number two son should be the leader. And it didn't become him. It was a younger cousin of his that was chosen. And he thought he would be protected because he saw correctly the greatness that would descend from him. Those are the two comments that Rashi makes. And they're often discussed as we go through this parsha, the different ideas that we learn from them. It struck me, and again, this is such a simple thought. When you learn the two Rashis together, it jumps out of the off the page as a factor that Chazal, in highlighting these two points, point out two different things. Korach made the same mistake twice, but once he looked a generation up, and once he looked a generation down. Both times he felt that he should be entitled to something, not because of anything that he did, but because of something either that his father or that his children were entitled to. The first being my father's the second oldest in the family. If the first oldest got his already, my father, who's the second, should get that, and that's me. I should get this because of the position of my father. And Rashi points out, he said he looked down from him and he saw greatness descending from him and said, if this greatness is destined to descend from me, it must be that I'm deserving of something. And when you take these two Rashis together, it's such a beautiful insight in the sense as to, you know, there's a place for there's a family dynamics. There's a king. Kings are, in fact, from father to son, father to son. But in most things, it's a meritocracy. You have to earn something. Who are you? What did you, when you get up to Shemayim after 120 years, it's not going to be, you know, just about what did your father do and what did your children do? We get credit. There certainly are. When our children do things for us, that's one of the things we do all the time. We do mitzvahs. We get stuck on a yard site. All of the things that we do are then the credit becomes accrued to our parents. That's why we do things like that, because we're from them and look at what, through them, what's been created in the earth, in the world. But at the end of the day, there's going to be a judgment on, well, who are you? What did you do? And Korach looks up and he looks down the shalshelet, looks up and down the lineal, his lineage, his chain, his genealogical chain, and he says, my father, my children. So it's coming to me. And as I heard the name of the stipler going, and so why was he wrong? Why was he wrong? His father was, in fact, the next son. Look at the greatness that did descend from him. So why was he wrong that he was passed over? So we see from his behavior that he lacked the most critical trait, and that is this desire for kavod, the desire for his own honor, the running after it, the grabbing it, the saying, what me? It magili. What about me? Is the one trait that if a leader has, the leader's not going to be successful. It can't be about you. A leader needs to be a leader because the leader cares about the people. That's the trait of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Anav Mikol Adam. Moshe was the most humble of all people. That's the trait of leadership, which Korach displays in all of this, that he was lacking in, and he could look up and down the lineage all he wants, but it wasn't going to be his because he didn't have that which he needed. He needed the kavod. He needed that honor and ran after it. And not only does he run after it, but he gets everybody else involved as well. On that point, I want to share another comment. We're going to, just to go back into the story, I want to zip through most of the story just to get to one other point. So Moshe falls on his face, just to go back a pasuk. Moshe falls on his face when Vayishma Moshe, when they come with his complaint, and Moshe says, in the morning, Hashem is going to make it be known. This is what we're going to do. As I mentioned earlier, you're going to take these fire pans, you're going to put ketores, you're going to put the incense, you're going to burn it. Hashem will choose, and he says, Rav lachem b'nei, you're taking too much Korach, he says to the group. And then Moshe says, Shimon ben Levi, he speaks to all the Levim, why are you doing this? Hashem has given you such great honor. He even tries to speak to Dasan and Aviram in Pasuk Yud Beis, Vayishlach Moshe l'kro l'Dasan v'la Aviram. He specifically sent and he said, come, let's talk this through. And they say, lo na'ala. We're not going to talk with you. And then they say one of the most painful psukim in all of Chumash. Hama'aki ha'lisanu mi'eret zavas chalavu divash lahamisenu ba'amidbar. Dasan and Aviram say, it's not enough that you took us from a land flowing with milk and honey. They're referring to Egypt. And they refer to it using the same way that Hashem describes the land of Eretz Yisrael. It's not enough that you took us from a land flowing with milk and honey, but you to kill us here in the desert. And now you want to lord over us. It's not enough. You haven't brought us to the land that you promised. We're not going to speak with you. And then Moshe says, Vayichar leMoshe ma'od. Moshe gets very angry and he says to Hashem, I've taken nothing from these people. Lo chamor echa, not even a single donkey. And do not turn to their offerings. And Moshe says to Korach, tomorrow you're going to see what is going to happen. And they each do. They gather together. Vayirah kvod Hashem el kol ha'idah. The presence of Hashem appears. Then we get the following two psukim that will stop and slow down for a little bit on. Hashem is now going to speak for the first time in this episode. We haven't yet heard from Hashem, so to speak. That begins here in Pasuk Chaf. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe v'el Aharon lemor. Hashem now speaks. We've already had Moshe's angry response to Korach and his rebellion. And Moshe says, Hashem says, he bodlu mitocho eido hazos. Stand back from this community, va'achale osom kiroga. And I will destroy them. Oh, I've had enough. Now, the language that Hashem uses from mitocho eido hazos is understood by Moshe and by Aharon, that Hashem was not just referring to Korach and his group, but this was actually a reference to the entirety of the Jewish people. And so they say, what do you mean? One person sins and you're going to destroy the whole people, the whole nation because of one person. That's the dialogue. It's a very odd dialogue between Hashem and between Moshe. Of Hashem saying, I'm going to destroy them all. And Moshe says, why? Only one person sinned. Why would you destroy them all? So the way the Ramban asks the question is, that's a pretty obvious argument that Moshe is making. If the people really sinned, then they were deserving to be punished. And if they didn't sin, why would Hashem punish them in the first place? So if Hashem planned on punishing them, then obviously they'd done something wrong. So what's Moshe saying? Only one person sinned. It's not true only one person sinned. They all sinned. What really happened that Hashem wants to destroy them all? And Moshe says it's only one person. So the Ramban says a very powerful thing on this particular comment. The Ramban says as follows. Hatam. The reason is as follows, says the Ravan. Ki mitchila, in the beginning, hayalev ha'am achrei Moshe v'Aharon. All of the peoples, their hearts were completely following after Moshe and Aharon. I mean, Moshe and Aharon had led them through the desert. He gave her the man, the well, the splitting of the sea, which was just a year before Mitzrayim. They're only a year away from Mitzrayim. All of the people followed after Moshe and Aharon. However, when Korach and his rebellion challenged the authority of Moshe, they challenged the authority of Aaron, and Moshe says angrily, this is what we're going to do. We're going to take fire pans, we're going to bring incense, and you're going to see only one fire is going to descend, and that one person is the chosen one, and the rest of you are going to die. V'kara Korach l'cholo eido, Korach gathered everybody and said, ki l'chvot kulam. I'm doing this for you, he announced as he went through town. It's not for me and my honor, which we know it was. He said, it's not for me. I'm here for you. I'm the people, the person of the people. Vayitov hadavar be'enehem, V'nikahalu kulam liros ulai yishar be'enehu elokim. The people said, this is interesting. Let's see. Maybe Korach is right. V'toshuv ha'avodah l'b'chore. Maybe it will go back to our firstborn. Everybody had a firstborn. Not everybody was a Levi, but everybody had a firstborn. In the original system, everyone's firstborn would be like a Levi. Everybody would have loved that. Korach starts this rebellion and says, it's not just for me. It's, I'm here for all of your honor, for your children. And vayakel aleihem Korach es kol ha'idah, the people all were gathered together by Korach to see. Says the Ramban, in that moment, when the people who had originally been all, of course they were all with Moshe and Aaron, but when Korach got them to come to check out the big test in the morning, to see the big showdown, whose fire pan would have a fire descend from heaven to consume the Ketores, when the people went to see him, I don't know, let's see, maybe he's right. Maybe it will come back to us and our firstborns. When they came, Nischaivu Kliya Shoya Meharharim Acharei Rabbim. The moment the people went in the morning to check it out, to see, maybe it will be Korach is right, they were all deserving of destruction just for going and thinking ill about their leader and rebelling against them. Harei Kimeharin Acharei Hashchina. It was as if they questioned the divine presence itself, and already it disregarded the prophecy of Moshe. Because as soon as they thought maybe this wasn't right, that when Moshe said that it should be his brother Aaron, that came from Hashem, maybe nothing that he said came from Hashem. In that moment, v'chayav and misa bidei shamayim. And that moment, they were deserving of destruction. All of the people, for wanting to go see and check it out and see, maybe Korach is right. What was Moshe and Aaron's argument? Their argument was they were loymeid zchus. They spoke in their favor. And they said, look, it's true that people are making a mistake by showing up. But they're just the people coming. It's Korach. One person has really sinned. One person has instigated everybody. One person riled everybody up. And as the rabble rouser, yes, they shouldn't have come. Yes, they should have never said, I don't know about sin. Yes, they made a mistake. But it's really all one person's fault. V'roi shiyamus hu levado. And therefore it should only, the punishment should be on him alone. L'farsem ulohodio oncho, so that everybody sees. It's really all on him. And the Ramban adds, v'zu derech shel mevakshei rachamim. And those who daven, those who plead for mercy, they try to mitigate the sin from the people and place it on the individual who is for sure guilty. Put it on him and leave the people alone. The Ramban says this we see from David HaMelech himself. In the story, we've quoted this a couple of times in Shmuel Beis, David HaMelech counts the people. He makes an inappropriate census. And he counts up all of the people and a plague breaks out amongst the Jewish people. And David HaMelech davens and says, for your flock, why are you? I'm the one who made the mistake. Put the blame on me. Put the punishment on me. Leave your people alone. They just followed after me. And it's true, sometimes even as followers, we need to be, we are responsible for our actions. We are responsible for who we follow after and whose sides we take. But the mevakshei rachamim, those who seek out our mercy from Hashem, will say, they were just the followers. It was the put it on that, that's the evil person here, and put the blame on them. And so Moshe and Aaron put it on Korach and say, he instigated the people. They shouldn't have followed after, but he's the instigator. And David HaMelech will later do this about himself, and he'll say, I was the instigator. Leave your people alone. Take the punishment out only on me. Spoken about this Ramban, this is a very famous Ramban. I'll just mention very, very briefly because we've spoken about this at length. On that discussion, the Ramban points out when the census was taken, the introduction of that story in Tanakh, when the Torah says that Hashem, that David HaMelech took a census of the people and it was an inappropriate census, the entire story begins with the phrase that Hashem, so to speak, Vayosef af Hashem lacharos b'Yisrael, Vayosas es David bohem. Very strange opening pasuk. The pasuk opens with the anger of Hashem again flared against the Jewish people, and he enticed David on their account and told and enticed David to take a census. which Rashi already points out. Like, it's a very, like, why did he get angry again? We don't, the story in Tanakh doesn't tell us anything right before that, that Hashem got angry at it. What does it mean that Hashem enticed David to count the people in an inappropriate way so that the people end up getting punished until David says, leave him alone, it's only on me? What had happened before that that led to all of this? This is a brilliant piece from the Ramban. We've spoken about it at length in the past, but I just, every Parshas Korach, I feel like it's an important thing to mention. So the Ramban says, you know what the reason why Hashem got angry again? What was he angry at beforehand? He was angry. He was a punishment for the Jewish people for delaying the building of the Beis HaMikdash. The Aron is still at this point. No one had built the Beis HaMikdash. It was a temporary structure. And the temporary Aron would go from one place to another place like a stranger in the land with no permanent home. Ve'ein hashvatim misoiririn lemor. And none of the tribes had the bestirred themselves, had the inspiration to say, how could this be that the Aron Hashem doesn't have a home? How can it be that I have a home and Hashem doesn't have a home? Nobody said, Nidroishes Hashem v'nivna bayis lishmo. Nobody said, let's build a Beis HaMikdash. And it wasn't until David alone had the idea, but it wasn't the people's idea. And since the people never had the thought, Ilu Hoya Am Yisrael Chafetzim Badavar, had the people desired a permanent home for Hashem, Viniz Oirubo Mitchila, and they would have aroused themselves originally to do it, it would have been done already during one of the days of the judges, Obimei Shaul, or during Shaul HaMelech, or even during David. Because if it would have been the people who were the inspiration for the building it, and they would have been mishtadel bibinyon, lo haya David habayne. David would have never been considered the builder. David could not build it because he had too much blood on his hands. But it wouldn't have been David. It would have been really considered the people's doing. Kasher ha'am lo hishgichu, but the people didn't pay attention. The people didn't care. They didn't arouse themselves to say, how could this be that Hashem doesn't have a home? I have a home and he doesn't have a home. And it was only David who thought of it. Therefore, he was considered the builder and he wasn't allowed to. It had to be pushed off until Shlomo. And that was the anger of Hashem that aroused or instigated David to take a count. And the count was done inappropriately. And many Jews died in a plague until David said, it's really on me. But all of that started from the fact that nobody thought about having a home for Hashem the way that they had their own homes. And all of this the Ramban gets into because, again, he jumps into this because in the same way that David, when the plague breaks out because they were inappropriately counted, David says, put it on me, in the same way that in our Parsha, Moshe says, put it on Korach, not on the people. It's true they sinned. They shouldn't have come to check it out, but it's really all Korach's fault. The same way that David did. And then on that, the Ramban says, but you should just know about that whole story. There was a reason why the people were punished. And that was, in the Ramban's understanding, is because they lived peacefully at home in Eretz Yisrael. And nobody had the thought to say, what are we going to do for the Ribbono Shel Olam? Why is his Aron bouncing around from place to place like a stranger in the land? We need to build him a permanent home. In any case, putting it all together, Rashi starts off by saying Korach was misled by looking a generation above and looking a generation below. And he thought because he had merit above and merit below, he was deserving of something which he himself was not actually deserving of. He in his own merit did not get it, but he thought he would get it because of the Tate or because of his Einoklach. But he himself was a person running after kavod. He himself did not deserve it, and he was passed over. And he therefore instigates all the people and says, I'm here for you! I want your children to be the Levium again, your firstborns to have the role. And all the people gathered together. And Moshe's argument to spare the people is, yes, they followed after. Yes, they had somebody who told them that he was really there for them. And they fell for it. They fell for Korach and his claim that he was really trying to give them their honor back. But Moshe says it's really all about Korach. It was all about his kavod, his desire for honor, and he instigated all of the people. And therefore, it's true, the people slipped up. They shouldn't have gone. But take out your wrath only on Korach and on these 250. Leave the people alone, even though they're deserving of punishment. But he misled them, and they were not strong enough to stand by that. But it's really all his fault, and that that Ramban pointing out that it's all, they were saying it's all on Korach. It was his desire for kavod, which he then had to mask and say, it's not about me, because nobody ever can say, I'm really after my own kavod. He hid it by saying, I'm here for your kavod. I'm here for your children's sake. And the people fell for that. They fell for that. You know, people want to hear that their children are going to be able to serve. They wanted it. But Moshe and Aaron argue, that's really one person, leave the people alone. And of course, Korach and his group is indeed punished. The earth opens up. And some of the thoughts, much, such a beautiful, so many things in this parsha. And just a few thoughts on that Rashi and the Ramban. Always a pleasure learning with you. And look forward to doing so again next week. Have an awesome week, everyone.